It is Parashat Vayetzeh, and he went out. And the portion, as we have heard there today, is Bereshit 28 and verses 10 to 22 was the section that we heard. The full portion is there on the slide for you. And the Haftarah portion there was from Hoshea, that was chapter 14, 1 through to 10, and from the Messianic writings from the Besorah according to Yochanan, that was chapter 1, 43 through to 51. Some fascinating things happening in the portions that we were looking at today. The ladder, of course, being one of the main ones that is going on there. But there's just what is happening around all of that, which I find really intriguing. We're going to dig down a little bit more around what Yaakov is doing at that point and so on. But I want to ask us the question, I think, which is asked so often nowadays. It seems if you've got different apps on your phone and read different articles and so on as I do, lots of things sort of go across my screen daily. And one of the things that crops up a lot, actually, and the question that people are asking themselves in today's world is this: are we alone in the universe? Comes up a lot, doesn't it? Doesn't matter, almost every other day, and someone's going, are we alone? Is it just us? Is there another people out there, or aliens? And apparently, someone kind of who was telling me this just the other day, apparently a few days ago, was it that it was meant to be the day that aliens landed in America and revealed themselves to mankind? Strangely enough, that didn't happen. But you know, everyone is thinking about it. You know, there's another one saying, oh, we're hearing radio things from that nebula, and we're getting this, and we don't know, and maybe it means this, that, or the other. Who knows? You know, are we alone? Who knows? I'm not going to give you the answer to that question today, just in case you thought I was going to give that to you. It would be wonderful to know, wouldn't it, really? Who knows? We may be. Maybe we're not. But right now, all we do know for sure is, as far as we're aware, this is us. This is what we have in the universe. But interestingly, what I think is the deeper issue around that question is that actually being alone scares people. It's more the thought, if we are the only things in this whole universe and cosmos, this is it, the only beings, sentient beings. It's almost like it scares people to be alone. Horrible being alone in this universe. Well, for most people, it's horrible. There are some who love being on their own, but I suspect for most people, the thought of being on your own is not something great. In fact, you've got to be honest, the scriptures are clear about this. Right back at the beginning, God created mankind, and he expressly recognized the fact of being alone is not good. It is not good for man to be alone. And he created a companion for Adam. It's not good to be on your own. Solitary confinement is acknowledged to be one of the worst punishments out there. We need that sense of we are not on our own. And this connects with our portion a little bit this week, because we've got a story this week, this bit of history that we read about, of a man who actually thought he was alone. He's on his own journey. He has a measure of understanding in all of this. You know, he's a man. It's all about him at this moment. He's on this journey. A key player. And he understands that he's a key player somehow in the national plan of God for his people. And yet this man, Yaakov, on his own, alone, and he's there in this place, and he's putting his head down for the night, and he sees this ladder set down towards the earth. And we know from tradition about this place today, it's identified, of course, with the Temple Mount. And Yaakov sees this, responds to this, and it's what he is saying which is so fascinating about it all. Yaakov goes to sleep. And instantly when I read this passage, I begin to see a parallel, of course, with Abraham before him. When Abraham was asleep, just as Yaakov was asleep, God communicates with both of them. It's like he waits for them to be in this kind of neutral gear, They're asleep. And God communicates with Abraham at that point. He communicates with Yaakov while he slept. And you know what? I can say those words, and none of us here are sitting with mouths open wide. No one is surprised, no one is astonished, and yet, just to say that again, God communicated with Yaakov. The living God. And it came down to Yaakov at that point with this vision, dream, call it what you want, shows him a slice into the spiritual realm and the reality of the spiritual realm. God does this because the ladder comes down to earth. This is not Yaakov reaching up to God to try and understand the heavens and what's going on. No, this is God reaching down to Yaakov. The one true God of the cosmos, the universe, at that moment is reaching down to Yaakov. I mean, just consider this for a moment. How many of you have ever had an experience like that of God while you were asleep, or maybe even while you were awake? No, I haven't. And Yaakov gets this vision of God, and God communicates with him. I'm not sure that Yaakov truly understands what God is saying to him at that moment, but God is speaking powerfully to him. What an amazing, wonderful event this was. And one thing is for sure, Yaakov did not expect it. He was not expecting it when he went to sleep that night. Took him off his guard, caught him unawares. He was not expecting God to speak to him. And I think maybe we're beginning to see something generate here, which leads up to some of his comments in a moment. Yaakov was not expecting God to speak to him. It was possibly outside of his sphere of awareness. It was maybe not the norm. Didn't expect God to communicate to him in that way. You know, Yaakov is the man who has inherited really this generational mantle of prophetic expectation one way or another. He's wearing this, and he's got this sense of mission, and he's on it, and he's doing it, and he knows what needs to be done, and so on. And we can talk forever about Yaakov as the man that he was, and there's so much about this man which is deeply fascinating in many, many ways. But he knows somehow he's got to do this. He's inherited this. It's on him, on his shoulders. Almost as if he thought it was down to him to succeed in this. This solitary man on a mission, generational, for his people, to fulfill what God has spoken to his fathers. So this is what is going to happen, and he needs to be doing this for God's sake. And then we get to his reaction. He's asleep. He's not expecting God to turn up in any way, shape or form. And he sees this vision, and instantly he's sitting there, as it were, bolt upright, which occasionally happens if the Lord, you know, breaks into a dream or something. You sit bolt upright, and it's his words instantly, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." I think it speaks volumes, if nothing else, about that sense of being alone for Yaakov. He didn't know the Lord was there with him. He wasn't expecting this. In the middle of all of his life, which he's built and done for himself, and understands the mission and his calling and his task and what he needs to be doing, it's almost like the last thing he was thinking about was God. God is here, and I didn't even know, he says. I wasn't even aware. I didn't know God was here. I missed that one. And you think, come on. A spiritual sense of being alone, as if the whole mission depended on him. Surely the Lord is here, and I did not know it. And you know, we need to be careful, because oftentimes this kind of remark, I've heard sermons preached about this and commentaries written along this line, which kind of links Yaakov as somehow global Israel, and Israel is totally unaware of God's existence, and so on and so on. I've heard sermons like this, and we are not going there. That is not what this is about. We've got to shy away from those kind of overgeneralizations. Because for one thing is for sure with Yaakov, Yaakov certainly knew that the God of his fathers existed. He was very aware of that. Of course he was. He'd grown up in the family being taught this. This was the nation's mission. God had called the people. He was certainly aware that God exists. And yet, by what he says and what he admits at this particular moment in his life, clearly, the day-to-day existence of God, the impact of God's reality in his life, was not something Yaakov was aware of. He was certainly missing something in all of this. The belief that God existed had failed to break through into his factual vision field of his existence. It did not mean something to him on a day-to-day level. He felt alone. I think this is a man who clearly knew that God was there. God was built into his conceptual universe and the way the universe ticks, and it was part of his life. He'd inherited and he'd grown up doing this and understood that and been taught this, and all of that was real. And yet, the reality of God, the presence of God, that sense of who God is in a real, tangible way has simply not broken into his life. He was a man with God and yet obviously without God. How can this be? We might ask ourselves. He knew of God, but it wasn't that complete presence and awareness. And you know what? It was something which Yaakov had maybe forgotten or had not been passed down the family in a helpful way. I don't know. Who knows? He'd forgotten one thing. If he'd learnt the lessons well from Abraham, he would have remembered this. How did all of this begin? How did the story of Israel begin? How did this narrative of God's salvation in humanity begin? Where did it start? And it starts with the calling of the Jewish people through Abraham. Up to that point, as we know, it was just single individuals who were called of God. But from Abraham onwards, he creates a people, a family, and a nation through whom he would work and speak as a light to the nations of the presence of the living God, that God is. He is, and real, and can be real to you. The message that needs to go out to all humanity. And it wasn't that Abraham was sitting in a library one day, flicking through some books, going, oh, it says here that there's a one true God. Or maybe I'll fall. No, that's not how it happened, is it? That is not how it happened. The one thing we read from the scriptures is that Abraham had an encounter with the one true God. He met God. God broke through spiritually into Abraham's life and so transformed him and changed him and called him. When Abraham responded in faith, he had that ability to reach out in faith, and God saw it, responds, and comes down to Abraham. Putting it into modern terms, Abraham had an encounter with the living God. Didn't have an encounter with theology. Didn't have an encounter with knowledge. Didn't encounter a library. He encountered God, the living God, the powerful, almighty God who is, who lives, who rules and reigns. And Abraham had an encounter with him. And it turned his life around. And we can kind of get caught up with the theology and the impact of God's calling on Abraham and say, yes, it's through him that Israel is created. So all of that is true and it is wonderful. But we then go on to forget that it begins with an encounter with the living God. Anyone who walks with God begins with an encounter with God. And has he forgotten? Yaakov, somehow in the midst of all of this, seems to have forgotten that he needs this. You know, I feel sorry for him on one level. I mean, we know this if you've got children. You know this, that children grow up in believing families, and, you know, they go to the synagogue and they grow up in the faith and they just accept it as part of who they are and what they are and so on. And you know what? It's so easy for children to function within the faith of their parents and yet never make it their own faith. We see this. It happens again and again. And if they don't make it their own faith, eventually what can happen is that they walk away and they say, it's not for me, da da da, as usual. That's fine, choice is choice, and people make choices. But there's a tragedy in the making if the children don't actually push through and themselves meet God and have an encounter with God and make it real for them. You cannot live on the faith of your parents. It has to be real for you. And I suspect that Jacob is this particular point here we reread of, you know, it's a while before we actually read in the Torah of Jacob praying at all. He's living in the reality of the promise and the inheritance, but the reality of God? Now, we can say, possibly, you might argue, well, yeah, but it's okay as long as he knew what he was a part of, and that's fine, and he just carried on. I don't think that is fine. You need to know God. You need to have an encounter with the living God. You need to have met, if putting it into messianic terms, you need to have actually met the risen Yeshua. You need to meet salvation, eyeball salvation in that way. Know who God is. Yaakov's in a place which is tragic, I think, in many ways. You know, he's saying, surely God is in this place. I did not even know it. I'm reminded, actually, you know, the classic thing when people talk about this, when they talk about the existence of God, and not just as a theory, but in a kind of real way, I'm reminded of the argument of the ants and the elephant. You know, a group of ants around the foot of an elephant, and they're all going, I don't see an elephant. There are no elephants. I don't see it. Do you see it? No, I don't see it. I don't see it. Well, do you see it? No, he's right. I don't see an elephant. And it's there, right before you, but you don't see it. You know, the elephant is there, and yet can have no understanding. Ant has no understanding of the elephant in terms of what it means, the reality of it, its existence, and so on. It reminds me a little bit here of Jacob. Jacob's unawareness. It's similar. God is right there before him, like the foot of that elephant. And Jacob, like the ant, is walking around and going, oh, that's God here. I don't know if it's God here. I don't know. I'm on my own. I'm just getting on with it. God was there with him. And not just in that place. Of course God was with him. Jacob was not alone. The living God of Israel was with him on that day and going with him on that journey, fulfilling the promises and inheritance and everything else right there, and Yaakov blissfully unaware of everything that God is doing around him, but God was there. And the elephant was certainly in the room, and Yaakov was keeping on bumping into the elephant all the time. But I did not know it. And yet the elephant is there, and I did not know it. And I think it's indicative, really, and we try and take this a little bit further beyond that immediate situation. The reality that we have to face here, knowledge itself cannot replace the presence and relationship with God, especially when it comes to feeling alone. You know, Yaakov was on his own. It's not great to be alone, to feel that you're on your own, and the whole time he wasn't alone. God was there with him. And Yaakov knew the fact that God was there, as it were. He knew that. He'd inherited that. But to actually know when he was in that place, he says, God was here, I didn't know it, I hadn't experienced it, I didn't see it, I couldn't recognize the presence, the relationship wasn't there that I was feeding off that made this real. And that takes us to quite a shocking conclusion, I think, even more than this. It is possible to bump into God on a human and even religious spiritual level all day long and yet be blissfully unaware of the enormity of the reality of God's presence and life. You can grow up in a religious tradition, and there are many, but you know, I'm not going to name names here, but you can grow up in a religious tradition, and you can grow up and it's God is this and God is that and God this, and we pray this prayer and there's God in the prayer, and all the time the elephant is in the room and you are unaware of the enormity of the actual reality of the presence of the living God of Israel. Imagine it. You could pray all your life and still never have had an encounter with God. It happens. It's real. It's a question for us. Yaakov was unaware of God's presence. God was there and he says, I do not know it. I didn't know it. And I want to throw a question out for anyone who's listening today. Whatever your tradition, whatever your background is, what if God is actually real, alive, a living presence, and not just a theoretical religious construct by which you live? Because we can value our constructs as much as we want. We can vault our traditions as much as we want. If by doing such we are literally bypassing the reality of the presence of God in our lives, then we are living a life that is vacuous. We need the presence of God in our lives. You know, we are made in His image. We are designed to function on the spiritual level, and there is only one God who can fill that vacuum in the human heart, and that is the living God of Israel. He is the only one. In a real spiritual way. I'm not talking theories. I'm not talking theologies. I'm talking about a real meeting and encounter with the living God of Israel. Our God lives. He rules and reigns the universe. And don't just say, yes, I know that because I've read it. That's not enough. Does He rule and reign in your life and you know it and experience it and see it every single day and are able when you pray to thank Him? Thank you, Lord, because you did that. You did that. I saw you do that. And this. Do you know that level of the presence of God in your life? Because Yaakov didn't. And he admits it. What if God is actually real? Now I know you know He is. I'm throwing that question into the broader field here. What if God is more than just a theory, a theology, a construct? What if God really is and is able to break into your life in a way that you may not consider that He will do? That's Yaakov that night, because God broke into his life. He wasn't expecting it. He wasn't anticipating it. It wasn't in his diary on his phone. God broke into his life completely out of the blue. God did it because God can, and He does. And I think this really sets up a bit of a tension, I think, for us when we consider for ourselves, our own faith, our own walk with the Lord. You know, we can all live, and I mean all, I'm not letting anyone off the hook, least of all me, in all of this today. We can all live with religious faith constructs, beliefs we've either inherited or taken as true, or we heard someone teach. We can all live within the confines of our safe spiritual worlds and everything that we have, and yet those worlds can fail to meet up to the reality of who God is. And we can all do this. I'm going to give you one really quick example here. You know, I like to be occasionally controversial. You know, one of these things is these little bubbles or balloons, call it what you like, faith constructs that people live in, and yet they feel nice and safe and at home with it. One of these is that Yeshua came to create a new religion. Well, He didn't. That is a faith construct when actually when the rubber hits the road, you begin to understand that it simply doesn't hold water. It's not true. It's not going to last, that idea. Now you can hold that notion, an idea, for as long as you want. You can cherish it and nourish it, and many would dare to challenge it, although increasingly more and more are today. But it doesn't fit the reality. Our God is not a God who just floats through the ether untethered as some random deity. He's the God of Israel, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. Our God is tethered, connected to the Jewish people through history, through covenants. When the rubber hits the road, you've got to know who God really is. And if the vision and idea of who God is doesn't fit the actual reality of who he is, then you have to be brave enough, courageous enough, to allow the reality to change you. And not you try to change who God is. We have to be open, mentally, spiritually, to what the truth and reality is. All of us need to be humble enough to actually understand that all of our thoughts, opinions, views, preconceived ideas, theologies, all of us can be in this boat. And you know, we can all sit there and go, you know, everything I believe is 100% correct. I have arrived at the final understanding. I don't need to change anymore. I know who God is, and it's never going to change. I'm sorry, if that's where you are, I've got news for you. God is going to break into that reality at some point, and he's going to break it and rip it apart, because you have not arrived. You have not got to the full understanding yet. There is still more that God is going to change in you. Still more he's going to challenge you in. And the more you cling to things and think, no, I don't want you to touch that, Lord. Please don't. I love that bit too much. Well, he's going to go exactly to those places. If you're holding on to things and refuse to change, then he will tackle that first. Yaakov had a paradigm for sure of how he felt the world functioned. He knew what it was. He was on a journey. His life was ordered and everything else. He knew what was what. He knew what he held to be true. And then bam, God revealed himself to him and broke into his existence. And instantly the world for him changed. He was not expecting it. Everything he'd thought, everything he'd held true. And suddenly God comes and meets him at that moment. You should be beginning to now think of someone else who also has this experience. Because it's actually quite frequent in the scriptures all the way through. Think of Shaul, who encountered the living God. You know, we can all inherit our faith, we can inherit ideas and concepts and everything else, and we can just hold on to them and think, that's it, this is the final bit, and it's not going to change. You know, I've said this before, there's things that I believe today which I did not believe 30 years ago. I only got to where I am today because I was actually willing to allow God to challenge areas of my faith, theology, structure, thought and everything else, and actually admit that I still have to learn more. We all do. And it often happens when God breaks through into areas and we get new revelation, new understanding. God is alive. He's not a theory. He's able to break through. He's able to bring more into your life. It's crazy, isn't it, that we can be in a religious situation, a faith situation, where we can say X is true and I didn't know it. Well, I suspect there's a lot of things that are true and you don't know yet, that you haven't seen it yet. Things can be true beyond what you think and accept. Think you've got a final picture of this or that? I suspect the Lord will challenge it. And you know what? Actually, as Israel, I think as Jews, we should be especially open to this idea. Because God has broken into human reality so often in the past, challenging ideas, leading people to change their lives and do different things to what they thought they were going to do. Again and again, when we're reading through the Tanakh, we read of the God who is alive and breaks through. He doesn't leave things as they are. And if we in our lives, if we in our theological lives, in our faith lives, have got to the point where we're thinking, no, I know what I believe, it's fixed, God isn't going to change it, nothing is going to change, then think again, because that is not the Jewish experience of walking with God. And this is where I want to veer into the real challenge today. Not for us so much here in this room, but maybe for those who are listening. You know, Judaism has always taught that Mashiach would come. It's even built into the Maimonidean creed. I believe that Mashiach will come, even though he may tarry. Mashiach is coming, is core to Jewish belief, built into the very foundation of what Judaism is. So it's always been in Judaism a question of who is Mashiach, not if. Who is Mashiach? And here comes the challenge. Just imagine for one moment, what if Yeshua is that Mashiach? What if Yeshua is Messiah? And I'm throwing that out as a challenge. Because, you know, for other Judaisms, the inbuilt assumption has been, and we hear it again and again and again, Yeshua is not the Mashiach and so on. We've heard it, we don't need to repeat it here. But you know what? What if he is? Just because you've been taught that, just because maybe you've grown up with that in your spiritual faith community and millions of people have told you that he cannot be the Mashiach, well, what if he actually is? That's my challenge to you today. Just like Yaakov that night, one day you stumble into the reality of the fact of Yeshua as the Jewish Mashiach. Because he is. The reality of that can, does break through into many people's lives. And you'll say, yeah, I know, but you know, experts say he isn't, professors say he isn't, theologians say he isn't. Well, there are just as many experts and theologians and professors who say he is. We're talking about the reality here. What if the truth, despite passionately held views, what if the actual truth, the reality is, as Yaakov found out that night, as Shaul found out on his way to Damascus, just what is if the reality and truth is Yeshua is the Mashiach of Israel? You see, Yaakov's concepts, I think, were off kilter. He wasn't expecting the living God to break through, to change his life, do something for him in that way. And we can limit God. Yeah, we can say, well, God wouldn't do that. He wouldn't send his son. That is limiting God. That is saying that God cannot break through and do something like this. He can. He did. Yeshua came to mankind, to the Jewish people 2,000 years ago. He was born. He lived a Jewish life. He died a Jewish man and rose again, the Redeemer and Atonement of Israel. And we can limit God theologically as much as we want, but the living God of Israel will have none of it. He will always break through into the reality. Shaul, didn't he? Passionately believed that Yeshua was not the Mashiach 2,000 years ago. He so passionately believed that Yeshua was not the Mashiach that he was literally stoning those who did believe that Yeshua was Mashiach. And he was fixed in his views. His theology was great as far as he was concerned. It was never going to change. That was the reality as far as he was aware. And he was well taught and he understood the scriptures and everything else. He absolutely was on point. Except for one thing. He had not encountered the living God of Israel. Until he did. And that day, when he actually met the living God of Israel, he actually met Yeshua on that way to Damascus that day. He had a 180 degree turnaround. He joined the Messianic Jews and then became the one who was persecuted as well because of his understanding. You see, this is what I'm saying. It is possible to be 100% convinced that you are absolutely correct and right. And it's only when God breaks through into your life that you become convinced that what you believe that far is wrong and needs changing. The question is, are you ready and open for God to break through into your life? Not just the people here listening online as well. Are you ready actually for God, reality God, who lives and rules and reigns, to break into your life in a way where he can demonstrate his reality. Demonstrate Yeshua to you. Are you open to that? Are you ready for that? Do you think God can? Because he can. I want to say that what I'm talking about here are essentially eternal realities. It's not an opinion whether God exists or not. I'm sorry, it's not. I know atheists would say I disagree. It's not. God exists whether you believe in him or not. It's beyond opinion. It's an eternal fact. Now you can argue with it, but it's an eternal fact. And I'm going to put in the same bucket as all of this, is Yeshua also is the Messiah of Israel. He is the one that Adonai sent for salvation to us, as the prophets and the Torah and the Tanakh predicted would happen. He is the Jewish Mashiach. Whether you agree with it or whether you don't, it is an eternal fact. And you know, this is the interesting thing about this, that does make me smile at times, is that atheists deeply believe that God does not exist, and it doesn't even change a single thing about God's existence. It doesn't change it at all. It's really quite amusing on one level. It's likewise also with Mashiach. If you've encountered Messiah, you know your salvation lives. You know your Messiah lives. If you've actually had that encounter spiritually with Yeshua Mashiachenu on the road like Shaul did to Damascus, if you have had that, and I have, and you have, I know, you're sitting here today, I know you have. If you have actually had that encounter with the living God of Israel, and he's broken through into your life, and he's revealed himself and his salvation to you, then it is literally life-changing and transforming, and you're never the same again. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking, you know, we love traditions. We love theology. I love the philosophy that goes with it. You know I do. I'm deeply into all that kind of thing. But it is not on the same level as actually having a living relationship with the God of Israel and Yeshua Mashiachenu. It's simply in a different league. It makes such a difference. You know, even if you couldn't read and you couldn't study theology or anything else, if you actually had that encounter with the living God, then you know, when you know, you know, you know that God is God. He is God, he is God every single day. That will never change. When you've met him, you know. When you've had that encounter, you know. You know, when I first came to the Lord many, many years ago now, I've lost count of how many years I've now walked with the Lord. But you know, when I had that encounter with God, I remember that night. And it's as fresh in my memory as anything else. I was down on my face in my bedroom crying out to God. I was so desperately aware of my sin before God, of my corruption spiritually before God. I cried out to him. It was like my sin was so enormous, so dark, so awful. And I cried out to God that he would find a way to deal with this because it was unbearable. I could not see my way through. And I cried out to God that night. And it was as clear in my head as anything else that the answer from God was, I have a way to meet Yeshua, my son. He is the one who died for your sins. And you know, it was lifted like that from my shoulders. That's an encounter with God. I was there. I remember it. I know it. And I know what happened in the days that followed on from that as well. I know that that was real in my life. If you know it, you know it, you know it. This isn't theology. This is about knowing the reality of God in your life. And there's no one who can take that away from you. You know, God's existence, Mashiach, they're not provable in the human rational sense of that. This is beyond that mankind working it out kind of thing. God is God is God. Mashiach is who he's always been. That deep truth does exist. It is beyond opinion and thoughts and ideas. It's like the elephant in the room. We may keep bumping into God every single day, that that elephant will always exist, and until we actually look up and begin to understand the enormity of that, we're not going to get it. In fact, the ant can be halfway up the elephant's leg and still saying that elephants don't exist, and the only thing you conclude from that is the ant just looks foolish. That's reality. I want to modernise Yakov's statement. As controversial as it might be to say it, it runs like this. Yeshua is the Mashiach of Israel, the one we expected, and I didn't know it. But now you can. It came as a shock that day that God could be so much more than he believed, had expected, but the reality of God's living presence broke into this man's life and experience. The understanding of Yeshua as the Mashiach of Israel, the salvation, the atonement, which God has brought to us for our sins, may be strange as a thought, but God can break into your life and reveal this to you. So the question really is, are you open? Are you willing? Are you ready to hear? Do you dare? Let me throw this challenge out there. Do you dare to actually say to God, if Yeshua is Mashiach, then reveal him to me? Do you want to pray that? If you're so confident, the fact, for people listening, if you are so confident in the fact that he is not, do you dare ask God to show you that he either is or isn't? Or are you scared of the answer you might get? I think we all need to experience more of God. It may challenge our dearly held convictions, but we need to experience more of God in this day and this time. We certainly do. You know, with the challenges this world faces, theology isn't going to fix it. Ideas, thoughts, philosophies, not going to fix it. Knowing that God exists is not going to fix it. What is going to fix it is an encounter with the living God to change you, because as you are changed in him, you bring that change into this world. We need those encounters with God. They're littered through the Jewish experience. They're all there through our history. And maybe, again, my final thought on all of this, maybe, if you're listening to this, and maybe you've not encountered the living God of Israel, maybe you've not encountered the risen Yeshua, I want to challenge you. Reach out to God. Pray. Ask him to reveal himself to you. He is well able to show you his reality. More than able. We read it from Shaul. More than able to reveal to you his reality. He's more than able to reveal Yeshua Mashiachenu to you. The spiritual reality and truth. The eternal truth of that. He is more than able. Are you willing? Are you willing to pray that? And ask and seek God? My prayer and hope is that you will. That yeah, just as Yaakov, you will be able also to say, you know, maybe you were asleep and you wake up and you say, God is here, I didn't know, God is here. I've had an encounter with the living God of Israel. That is what we all need. Amen.